Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to another wonderful week at Sustainable Binghamton Radio.
Another wonderful week.
We're still waiting on a good half of our guests, but we're gonna start right in with Engineers Without Borders
in just a second. Start right in.
All right, Zach's in a lyrical mood today, I guess.
Not at all.
Not at all. No.
I'm just so happy Dylan's here.
Yes, we have Dylan back from all of last year, right? You started with us our first season.
Yeah, I was trying to think of when
I think you did.
Stuff.
I think you've been doing this as long as we have.
We have an anniversary coming up.
Yeah, I think so.
We have an anniversary coming up.
So we're gonna be talking nature preserve in a bit, but this is Sustainable Binghamton Radio. It's a project of the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition. We have a Facebook page, Sustainable Binghamton Radio. Brisk also has a Facebook page. And now their latest initiative, which you might have heard about, making some waves in the press, is Binghamton Rising. And that's an economic by local, support local, 10% shift campaign. So if you're interested in learning more about that, or if you're a locally owned business, check that out too. So I guess we'll jump in with Jake. Sorry. Totally messed up.
Who are we jumping in with? Vanessa?
Usher.
Yeah.
You can call me Jake, though. It's okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Jake, brain freeze. Jake short for Oscar.
Brain freeze.
Usher. Everyone calls me Jake.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had you on last year as well. So we're doing a little, as we said, a reunion show tonight.
It is.
And last year, your organization, Engineers Without Borders, was doing some amazing stuff that you brought up. One of those things was about bike racks. I haven't seen them yet.
That's because they're not around yet, but we are still working on them. Basically, Convocations gave us about a $1,000 grant in order to get the project rolling, and that's where we left off last semester. This year, our new local projects coordinator, Tasha Kasigi, took over the project, and we're pretty much where we left off. We wanted to get a bunch of different bike racks going, but due to the really strict regulations of the school on building a bike rack, surprisingly, we can only make one. So we're going to put it around the whole P-Squad kosher kitchen area. We're going to make ourselves a bike rack, and hopefully it'll be pretty big. So, because right now we have a lot of people coming in with bikes, which is good. But there's
nowhere to put them.
Yeah, like when I ride
my
bike here.
They're just chained anywhere.
Yeah, just throw it around a tree. It looks ugly.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to try to make it aesthetically appealing, and there's going to be some little, EWB plaque to be like, yeah, we did it.
Those bike racks, I think in terms of aesthetically pleasing, was there some discussion of painting them or something? I vaguely remember from last year.
Yeah, that's still in the works. What the plan was last year is we were going to throw up a whole bunch of different ones around different buildings and kind of make them, to suit the building. The engineering building, we'd throw, rulers and pencils on it. And we kind of have these people in the art community get involved. But now that we're down to one bike rack, we're kind of squabbling. We're like, all right, which design are we going to go with? So it's completely up in the air at this point. But there's a lot of cool ideas floating around.
Yeah, I've seen some interesting ones, made out of, a whole log with, literally a log on its side with grooves cut out for the tires, and then you put chains through it, and it's pretty cool looking. So, I don't know. I'm excited to see how that turns out and to park my bike there.
Are you allowed to disclose any other of the other ideas that are being floated?
One other idea that's being floated around in... Are you talking about bike racks or just in general?
Bike racks.
No, I'm not. Because I don't really know which one they're going with. I remember last year they had a whole bunch of ideas, and now there's a separate committee from me that's kind of working it out. They haven't really filled me in too much.
I see.
It's not that I'm not allowed to disclose it. It's just that I really don't know where they're going with the project at this point. But regardless, there's going to be a bike rack. And I think it's important to note that a lot of how much people want to use bikes is how bike-friendly their environment is.
Yeah, for sure.
During the summers I go to Oregon, and it's the most bike-friendly city in the U.S. Literally, one-fourth of the roads are... The road is divided, so it's half of for cars, and the other half is just for bikes. So the bikers get their own roads. The buses all have, stand-up bike racks, so you can lean them up vertically. And, I think that, honestly, part of getting people to use bikes more is just showing them that, Binghamton is bike-friendly.
Right.
Hopefully getting that going.
Absolutely. I know the university has... there's some regulations and counting regarding how many cars, how many vehicles are on campus at any given time that they have to report those that data to the state. So I'm surprised that there's harsh regulation for bike racks. Is that because of liability for, like, if the bikes are stolen or something?
Yeah, I think that is it, because you have to make sure that the bike racks are, like, 100% secure and, you know, nothing can go wrong with them, because by putting up a bike rack, the university is ensuring that their bikes will be safe, et cetera. The university is really bureaucratic about letting us do anything. I mean, we can't even climb trees anymore, if you guys have heard about that.
Really?
No.
Students are legally not allowed to climb trees.
Oh.
On campus.
Interesting.
That doesn't really seem to promote happiness.
But, okay, so that was one of the projects we talked about last year. We also talked about the paper project. I think we hit more than 1 million sheets or something. Every time I go to print in the pods, there's a little note telling me that I'm maybe of questionable ethics by printing my notes.
Yeah, that was also one of our things. It's just like, let's constantly let people know how much they're printing, and maybe that'll have some effect on how much they print. If you've noticed, this year there are longer lines in the duplex than there are in the simplex.
Mm-hmm.
So assuming that people don't go, oh, duplex, now I can print more, it is actually working. And not assuming, you know, empirically we are printing less. I don't know exactly how much the numbers are now, but I know that the people that gave us the project, the computer center, they have left it with us because we're actually having an effect with it. So mm-hmm. It's going well. And after we implemented our ideas last year, we were like, okay, where do we go from here? So we just put up a new committee. And we have a new project manager, and he's picking up the project. And within a few weeks, we're gonna have some new ideas. We're thinking maybe like a recycling drive or something at the end of the semester.
Hmm.
Cool.
So with the printing and stuff, are you able to be involved in lobbying for, you know, additional duplex printers? Or because I noticed, like, for instance, in the library here, we have two simplex printers and one duplex printer.
Three simplex printers
and what?
Two duplexes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on the side that I'm on, I always print from, there's two in one. And
try the other side. It's much easier.
Much easier?
Yeah.
So, which is always just, like, frustrating, I guess, because if I want to get in and out, I always have to use the simplex.
You know, more importantly, we need to have a queue system where if you're printing a miniature novel, you can go to one printer, and if you're printing three pages, you can go to another. Because frankly, if I need to print three pages, I don't even go to the duplex, even though I should. You know, it would save paper, but it's too long.
Right.
And the thing with getting more duplex...
And they charge you on the duplex for printing four pages if you print three.
Yeah.
Which is also a kink in the system.
Yeah, that's something we should get changed. Then again, everyone has so much money on those cards. I mean, I know very few people that have even been able to use those, like, you know, literature majors who can just print and print and print. I've never been able to.
Yeah, well.
But the thing with getting more duplexes is that the school, you know, they have the budgetary problems. We have to spend $16,000 to get Snooki here again.
The ab contest. Heard about that. I'm guessing that's been discussed on other radio shows.
Probably at length, yeah. So those were, let's see, oh no, we also talked last year about the Nature Preserve. I think that's probably why I originally contacted you as an organization.
And that's where Dylan certainly had a lot more to say than I did, for obvious reasons, because that is his home. So I'll let him talk about what he suggested Engineers Without Borders do with the Nature Preserve.
EWB first contacted me a while ago, but they've made steps and they've made... boardwalks up near the field trail, and so the latest project that you guys contacted me about was making a big deer exclosure fence, basically a place where we keep deer out of it, trying to grow some native plants and things that'll hopefully create some more habitat out there for other animals and birds. But we created a forest gap out there. It's a type of habitat that we didn't have until now, and unfortunately that involved cutting a couple trees down, but we have this big forest gap, and EWB is going to fence it in, and it's going to be a major project, so I hope everybody has fun with it.
Wow, cool. So then is there other stuff going on?
We're finishing up the scoreboard project. There's a high school in the local Ithaca area that came to us with a problem last semester. they're using this trailer to carry around their scoreboard on fields for their games, and, you know, it's completely shot, and, you know, they're pretty much carrying their giant scoreboard at this point. So we're just trying to build them some kind of new device where they can, you know, wheel these things back and forth. We've done a few projects with local schools and such.
I think I've seen photos of playgrounds.
Yeah, yeah, we did that last year, too. There was a, I forgot which school, but yeah, we helped reconstruct parts of their playground, you know, and the fences to make that better.
Are you involved at all with the Binghamton Parks Project? Design your own parks? Oh, okay. Well, that maybe would be another future thing for Engineers Without Borders.
Yeah, I'd like to say, just on the radio right now, that first off, Engineers Without Borders is not just for engineers, despite the name. It's deceiving. Anyone at all can get involved with Engineers Without Borders, and frankly, most of the stuff we do is not technical at all anyways. It's, you know, building fences at all. You don't need an engineering degree to build a fence. And so if anyone's interested at all, you know, you can come in and, you know, join us. And also, now that we're finishing up kind of all these projects around the same time, where we are a little bit desperate for new projects. We want to keep doing things because, you know, everyone's restless. So again, everyone's welcome to come. And even if you don't want to come, if you just have an idea of something that Engineers Without Borders should do, you know, right, anyone listening at all, you know, send someone on Engineers Without Borders an email.
What's the email?
My email is afriedm8@binghamton.edu. And you can just contact me and I'll forward it to the university. But also you can always just Google, you know, Binghamton Engineers Without Borders, and then you'll get all the contact information you need.
Right. And so, yeah, so your membership is just for students, right?
Yeah.
But projects, as you said, can be anywhere.
Yeah.
And yeah, any big trips coming up?
Not coming up soon, but coming up for sure. Every like few years we do an international trip, which we try to go do something for a country abroad. And I think this year we're looking at a water filtration system for somewhere in Peru.
Amazing.
But that is very far out in the future. So perhaps next time I'll have more information on that.
Great.
How did you guys decide on that project?
I don't know.
It just came to someone's attention. And...
Yeah, yeah. Because that's how all of our projects come to mind. Uh-huh. And then that's why I said that just a second ago, that if anyone has ideas, you know, let us know. Because right, that's how every single one of our... There's no, like...
Very democratic.
Yeah. No, it's not even democratic. It's like, oh, is there a project? Let's do it.
Right.
Fair enough.
It's just, let's find any idea and just roll with it, you know?
In terms of Peru, is it the location there, is it a sister city or... it's okay. That's fine. I'm just curious because I know a lot of people involved with like different sister city projects, which I think is a really cool thing for areas to do.
Yeah, my sister's in Peru right now, actually.
Yeah.
How about that? What's Binghamton sister city again that we're doing stuff with right now? Oh. Matt Ryan just welcomed, what's the country? It's in Latin America. Yeah, we have a sister city.
I know we have in El Salvador.
El Salvador. It's somewhere in El Salvador.
We also have in France,
yeah.
And I know Vestal kind of had one in Russia.
Did you guys?
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of partnerships between cities.
Very cool.
So great.
Should we have a nature moment at this point?
Or maybe we should throw our musical interlude in here.
Okay. Sure, we can do that. Okay, so you're listening to WHRW 90.5 FM. This is Sustainable Binghamton Radio, and you're about to hear a band called Daffodil,
who just had their record release.
This is WHRW 90.5 FM. You're listening to Sustainable Binghamton Radio, the only radio show that I know of in the greater Binghamton area that is solely committed to issues related to sustainability.
Especially that has Dylan as their guest.
Yeah, and that has Dylan Orvath as their guest.
Who, I suppose.
Yeah, modest. Steward of natural resources here at Binghamton University. So we were talking earlier about this cleared space that you guys have got going. Can you explain a little bit more about what that is and what the purpose of that is?
So what we do at our nature preserve is we try to create as much diversity as possible, and part of that is creating diversity in habitat, so all the different places that animals and birds live. And one thing that was kind of missing here was a deep forest gap, basically. Not that we have a real deep forest, but we have enough forest that we could create basically a place where, say, naturally, if a gigantic old growth tree had fallen, it would create a big space in the middle of the woods. But since we don't have gigantic old growth trees, then we got to make it ourselves. And so a couple other professors and I went out there, and actually a couple of us just watched while one of them did all the work. But watched the trees come down a little bit, and we created a little gap out there.
So how old is our forest in comparison to New York forests? Is it relatively young compared? Because from what I understand, trees, forests in New York are kind of young.
Yep. Probably the majority of the forest in New York are second growth forest, which means it's been cut down anywhere from 100 years ago to, recently. So there really isn't a whole lot of old growth type forest left. When you hear politicians say there's more trees now than there were 100 years ago, then the reason that's true is because 100 years ago they were all cut down. So now there's, we have a lot of land that's old abandoned farmland that's returned to forest, and of course parks and things like that have returned to forest. So our particular forest on campus is about, most of it's probably about 50 years old.
So pretty young.
Yep. Especially in the terms of a forest. I mean, forests are, the lifespan of a forest is centuries. So we're just here for a blink of the eye of a forest. The gap type thing is just a little habitat in the middle of the woods. That's a little open thing.
Mm-hmm. Gives plants that need more light a little chance to survive.
Right. Yeah, and we don't have a whole lot of wild understory anymore because of our deer problem on campus. Many deer, too many mouths to feed.
And that's where the Engineers Without Borders come into this
equation
of open space.
Yep. So we had dropped all these trees, and we tried to orient them so that they'd be inside the gap and create maybe a tangle that the deer wouldn't want to get into. Mm-hmm. And maybe that would protect the plants. But it turns out, a month later, there were deer tracks all through it. And so they're still eating everything and climbing over the logs and all that type of thing. So we decided to have a fence made, and EWB wanted to do a project. So we said, hey, how about you make a fence over here?
Hey, guys.
A 10-foot high fence.
We got something for you to do.
Well, yep. A 10-foot high fence.
Yeah.
Is it going to have a door or how?
Maybe. We'll see what they want to do, but we'll probably make it kind of a hidden door on it because of our other. We just don't want people going in and out and hurting themselves on any logs or anything. Yeah. Or picking plants that might, hopefully, maybe grow there.
Right. So it'll be kind of a secure space for
plants. Yeah. And so almost everything we'll be able to get in there besides deer and woodchucks.
Hmm.
So, raccoons and opossums could still get in there if they want to. And obviously birds and little things, little invertebrates and salamanders.
So what's the fence? Do you know anything about the aesthetic design of it, or is that completely up to Engineers Without Borders?
We have some stipulations on what we can use out there. So we mainly want things that'll last a long time. And so one of the biggest things, or one of the best types of wood to use out there is locust.
Mm.
And we have, if you're on campus and you see the trees with the gigantic spikes on them,
mm-hmm.
Those are a type of locust tree. Those are honey locust, and we're using black locust. And it's just really hard, rot-resistant wood.
Oh. We're going to take a quick break from our interview with Dylan. We'll be back with him because we have an important phone call from the executive director of the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition. Hey, David, you're on the air.
Well, good evening.
Yeah, it's nice to hear from you.
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry I couldn't make it into the studio tonight.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. And I know you have a board meeting tonight. Big and exciting decisions to be made with BRISC.
Absolutely. So I have a few updates for folks that didn't catch it. We launched Binghamton Rising last week. And Binghamton Rising is a campaign of self-renewal, of self-reliance, of participating in creating a vital economy in our area through changing some of our buying habits.
Mm-hmm.
Is one, that's one major part of it. So we're building a business network and asking people to think about buying locally. Buying locally has this multiplier effect on our economy, and if we shift 10% of our consumer consumption habits to buying locally, we can actually create probably in the region of 500 jobs within a year. But it'll take us a while to get up to that 10% level. So that's one part of it. It's pretty exciting, and there'll be lots of news. And, in fact, I think the website is up. It's still under construction at BinghamtonRising.com. And the other part of it is that, you know, a vital economy is great, but a healthy community is one that also recognizes that all its citizens need to participate in that common wealth building exercise. So so we're going to be working with two community development financial institutions. These are like special credit unions that do micro lending and financial stability programming and loans, affordable mortgage loans, all of these kinds of things, all targeted at low-income populations and people who normally would not have as easy access to our financial system as perhaps some others of us do. So those are two things that are happening, and we're really proud and happy and honored, actually, to be recognized by a promotional event called Party with a Purpose. I think mm-hmm. this is now the third one yep. of these Party with a Purposes, and that's happening tomorrow night at Terracotta. This is to raise funds and raise awareness about the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition, about Binghamton Rising, and about the programs that we're doing. So,
and about the local establishment that will be hosting it.
And for the local establishment that will be hosting it. So we're encouraging people to come on over to the Party with a Purpose tomorrow mm-hmm. evening. Join us. There's quite a lively crew already signed up. There is a Facebook page, and if you go to either our website or Busy Life Ventures, BIZILIFE, you can find information about Party with a Purpose there.
Great.
Actually, I think you could now Google Party with a Purpose Binghamton, and you can actually find it. So,
yeah, we had Catherine and Omar on last year, so some of our listeners may be familiar with it. Last time, the fundraiser was for Broome County Gang Prevention.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. And that was great. That was we all had a good time over at...
That one was at Mad Moose.
Mad Moose, that's right. Mm-hmm. So this time it's at Terracotta on Straight Street, and it starts at 6 o'clock.
Great.
And then, let's see, the other thing is I just want to do a quick... mention of the Livable Communities Alliance, our first conference in Binghamton. This is an alliance of about 100 different organizations, all involved in
smart growth,
really
right?
Approaching community I'm getting like three phone calls here, so I'm being interrupted. And I know it's about the board meeting. Let me just say, it's a great conference. It's at 1 to 5 o'clock. It's at the Helen Foley Theater at the Binghamton High School. And it will be, we'll do a showing of Beyond the Motor City, which is a documentary by Aaron Wolf. He himself will be there. And it's about Detroit, and it's about the sort of revitalization of the economy there, and we will have a community panel and discussion, draw parallels to Binghamton, and explore pathways to regional prosperity here. So big agenda, but it'll be very interesting. It's free and open to the public. Just show up 1 to 5 o'clock at the Helen Foley Theater at Binghamton High School on Main Street.
And that's tomorrow also?
And that's Saturday.
Oh, that's
I'm
Saturday.
Sorry. That's Saturday, folks, yeah.
Okay, great. And is there an energy roundtable coming up too?
Energy roundtable is indeed coming up. And, I have to look for...
I think it's next Thursday.
What day is it?
I think it's next Thursday.
All right. Let me just have a quick look
Well,
here.
They can find it at BinghamtonSustainability.org.
That is true.
So.
They can do that. Folks can do that. And, yeah, it is Thursday. And, yes, please go to BinghamtonSustainability.org and look that up and join and do some networking around energy.
Yep, great. So have a good time at your board meeting.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Yep.
Bye. All right, bye-bye now.
Bye, David.
All right. And we're back to Nature Preserve. We were mid-discussing cleared space, why that was important. We were talking about leaving logs. I don't think we actually said what happened to the lumber on air. We had that conversation offline here.
Right, yeah. So, all the logs were left pretty much in place to hopefully become soil again after our lifetimes are over. Though all the logs and things will rot away and add nutrients to the soil, which our land happens to really need a lot because it used to be really heavily pastured and used for farming before the university. Bought the land, so and so this is just a addition to our habitat that we have out there with not only forest, and we also have shrubland and grassland and spaces like that we maintain with the Friends in the Nature Preserve, mm-hmm. and volunteers who come out there and ironically cut things down in our nature preserve to help save it.
Right, yeah.
But within specific guidelines.
Right, exactly. You can't just cut anything down. You got to get my permission, and you got to know what
rules.
You're doing. So
yeah. There are rules. Yeah.
So there are things that we should not cut down, definitely. Like most trees out there.
And so these volunteers, they can be anyone, correct?
Right, yep. We get people from the community, from faculty, staff, and definitely students. Obviously, most are students that want to go out there and do a little bit of work with various tools and try to provide as much experience as possible doing outdoors work. And so, and of course, I should say what we are cutting down is mostly invasive species and things that shouldn't be there. That's mm-hmm. normally what we take out. Anything native, we tend to leave alone unless we're creating habitat.
Great.
What's on like the docket for the Nature Preserve? I mean, do you guys have any other initiatives you're working on, or is it mostly just kind of maintenance tasks and kind of things that you're kind of ongoing?
We do. We bring a lot of students through from local schools, and so especially in the spring, if anybody is interested in being a volunteer nature guide, we'll train people to become nature guides out there and lead school groups.
I want to do that.
So yeah, definitely. Like I said, I especially need them in the spring. In the fall, I teach a class about natural history, and they usually do the guiding. But
do you get a T-shirt or?
Sometimes.
Is there a hat?
Yeah, that's actually something we got to work on again. I do.
I think there should be more nature preserve like merchandise.
Right.
Merch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Pushing the merch.
You guys should get a merch table somewhere.
Yeah. Soon we'll have a photograph book.
Really.
Nice.
We made.
I've seen the website has photographs.
Yeah, beautiful pictures on there, and we made a book out of a couple of local photographers and a couple of my crappy pictures, but we made basically a book of photographs of animals of the nature preserve from pictures actually in the nature preserve.
You should call that book Superstars of the Nature Preserve.
That might be a good idea. So
Nature Preserve VIPs.
Right.
Definitely.
Because we made a few for educational purposes, and so many
people like
wanted them that we'll probably make more and actually try to sell them.
So it'll be a fundraiser.
Yep.
I work for a local publisher. We might be interested in maybe a book deal. I smell a book deal here.
Right.
This is hotter than the Chilean miners.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. That's pretty hot.
I don't know what to say after that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I kind of got us off track there.
I probably shouldn't tell this story.
So volunteers, great, wonderful. Winter stuff, what's coming up? What should people be looking for that are wandering in the fall and early winter?
Actually,
I hear our snow's coming.
Yeah, right now, what I was going to use for our Nature Preserve Minute...
Well, let's do the Nature Preserve Minute.
Right, well,
let's do it right here, right now.
This is as good a time as any.
Right now is a great time to see raptors, basically the hawks, owls, eagles, you know, birds like that.
Oh, not like
birds of prey.
Velociraptors.
Right, exactly.
I was totally picturing the wrong thing there.
Okay. That'd be awesome if we had raptors out there. They'd be changing concepts out
there. That would definitely take care of the deer problem.
Oh, yeah. Yep. A couple other problems, too, out there. So, yeah.
Errant students.
The sign breakers.
No. Has someone been breaking signs?
Yeah. Every once in a while, there's people that take down signs and steal them or break them.
Do you want to send a message to those people right now on the air?
That doesn't involve cursing?
Or a call to action.
Yeah, that's the tough part about it, but don't let me catch you.
You heard me.
It's probably good. It's probably good that I haven't caught anybody yet doing it. But
But it's only a matter of time.
Yep, and don't start fires out there either.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't ever do that.
Yep. So, yeah, actually, we had parts of our preserve burn before.
That's not okay.
Do not make fires.
Unacceptable.
And the bears like fires too, so don't do that.
Do we have bears?
Yeah. They come through every once in a while. They don't live out in the preserve, but they pass through after eating bird feeders in neighbors' yards and.
Yeah, my friends had bears in their backyards in Bristol.
Yeah, so we're probably the edge of a couple different ones' territories, and they come through every once in a while. I haven't gotten any reports lately. I rarely see them myself. Usually they're just, you know, I see their butt as they're running away.
Right.
But that's really, you know, when I say that, it's like once every couple of years that I might actually see one.
Mm-hmm.
I see their sign out there, but they like I said, they pass through in the fall, and then they're going into hibernation for the winter, so they don't really...
Do you think they break some signs on the way through?
Not signs, but they definitely break bushes and trees down.
Oh, wow.
One time I was walking up there, and in our field trail, we have all these autumn olive bushes with berries on them. And I wasn't even really thinking clearly, but as I was walking up through the trail, all these bushes were broken down into the trail. And I thought, why did somebody do that? And I looked at one of them, and it was so big. And I thought, there's no way a person did this. And I realized it was bear. I'd gone through and just broken all these branches to eat the berries off the trees or off the bushes. And then later on, I found the sign they left behind with all the berries in it. So.
Yep.
But they're quite strong animals, and so we don't want interactions between them and students.
Right.
So that's why we don't allow camping or fires out there, or try not to.
Right.
So because usually all that means food, and food means bears.
I was gonna say, go out there, start a campfire, make some bacon.
Right. Exactly.
maybe fall asleep in some bacon.
Yeah. Have some honey.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you had a nature preserve moment that we keep...
Interrupting the raptors.
No problem. Keep interrupting me. That's quite all right.
All right, well, we're done.
That
now
gives us things to talk about. The time of raptor migration.
Right.
It's been super cool. This year, haven't seen a golden eagle yet, but they do pass through.
Ooh.
But we had a peregrine falcon come through, and a... Harrier hawk, which I don't know if anybody even knows what that is, but it's a really cool...
Sounds cool.
...swamp hawk that has a mask on its face. Really
I think
neat.
It's even cooler when you call it a swamp hawk.
Right, yeah. And then, let's see, what else? Vultures come through and
so it sounds like it's a good season for bird watching.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So look to the skies. Even if you're on campus, even if you're not in the woods, look to the sky because there's lots of neat things flying through.
The geese have finally left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're sleeping up there in the pond at night.
So there's still some up there because they're usually like 30, 40 geese. It seems like on the lawn of the ITC.
Right.
The,
yeah.
What is it? The Innovative Technologies Complex, where my office is.
Yeah.
So they've just been there every day, and finally they weren't there
Yeah, luckily, I mean, the preserve gets blamed for that sometimes, but most of those geese are actually from someplace else. Like the ones that, you know, they move around to different feeding areas, and the ones here that eat in the athletic fields and at the ITC are probably from the river. Hmm. They come over and feed there. We get a few in the preserve that sleep, and then they go somewhere else and feed. But
you were talking earlier about like old growth forests and stuff, and kind of like imagining kind of like the original landscape of this area before it was, you know, settled by like Europeans and stuff.
Right.
And I don't know, like do you know anything about like some of the species that used to be here in bigger numbers before? Like, is there, you know, is there evidence of some of these species that might have left or these kinds of things? Because I'm always interested to kind of recreate the landscape.
Didn't we have wild cats here?
Oh, yeah. We used to have puma and wolves here.
Like, as recently as...
Let's see. They were...
We're testing your history test.
Yeah.
Sorry. Natural history test.
Late 1800s.
That's pretty awesome.
They were gone.
That's darn
and
near awesome.
That was down near few. It was probably before that, but... Oh, yeah, it'd be great to have them here again.
Yeah.
I'd love to have them.
Has there been any thought to reintroducing them?
There's...
Given the deer issue?
There's been a lot of thought about reintroducing wolves to New York, mainly in the Adirondacks, of course, because that'd be where there'd be more uninterrupted land. Around here, just probably wouldn't work. They'd either get hit by cars or, you know, people would not want them around. So there'd be a lot of opposition to it. But yeah, they probably wouldn't be able to survive in our area, just because it's just not enough uninterrupted, you know, forested or natural landscape. You know, there's so many malls and roads and things, mm-hmm. so and people that wouldn't want them around.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who think that pumas are still around, but besides the occasional pet that's let go, there really aren't any, you know, living and vital, actual self-sustaining groups of puma around. That's the mountain lion or the cougar. Hmm. Other names for that cat.
That's just, you're just talking specifically about this region. They're still
right, yeah, this region.
Naturally
yeah.
Living in other regions.
Yeah, they're still out west mainly. So mm-hmm. pretty much the East Coast is devoid of these predators. There's a few, a couple pockets of them.
They've tried to reintroduce them to Florida, I think, with some success.
Yeah.
Apparently they bred them with some Western.
Yeah.
Western.
There weren't any left.
So
they had to bring in some from Arizona.
And the ones that were left in Florida were so inbred that they were like just like weaklings and they weren't doing anything.
Exactly. And still, even with that, there's only about 50, alive out there.
That's like considered a robust community compared to.
Yeah. Compared to what it.
The inbred dozen that were alive before.
Yeah. And see, it's funny because even down there, they find, you know, roadkill. They'll find a lot of sign of, you know, prey kills by the pumas down there. And with only 50 of them, they know where they are and what they're doing. And so, if there were pumas living around here, we should see their, you know, sign of them around, and we just don't.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people will call in. I've had stories from the DEC where people will call about puma in their backyard, and they'll go over there, and it'll be a house cat. And I don't think, if you saw a puma, there'd be no mistaking it.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have bobcats around. They are around still, but they're barely larger than a house cat. Hmm. Although some house cats are, they're being bred to be much bigger now, so some of them are bigger than the bobcats around here.
Speaking of roadkill, which we were talking about a second ago, I just saw a freshly dead fox. How common are foxes to see? I don't remember seeing so many around.
They're hard to find, but they're pretty common.
Okay.
Yep. We have both the species in our preserve. We have the red fox and the gray fox. Although I haven't seen a gray fox in a long time, but. Yeah, if you go 6 in the morning in the preserve, you might have a good chance of seeing a red fox out there. I've had them come up to me right on a trail. You know, in fact, I was talking to somebody out there, and a red fox came up behind him and looked at us and then ran away. And so by the time I could point my finger and say, look, it was already gone. But it was just trotting down the trail, and the red foxes actually love to use our trails as well. And so right now you'll see their sign around, because they're eating grapes and wild cherries out there, and they leave that in their scat. So if you, it's funny because I'll get emails about, oh, look at all the dog poop out there, and some of it is actually fox. And I don't clean up fox, because I like to point it out and show people. So, but if it's got a lot of berries in it and it's really dark black, it's probably fox.
That's gonna be some fox scat,
right? Huh. And we were showing all the
speaking
kids.
Of animal matter in the nature preserve. A request from my next door neighbor who has a dog is there any way that by the entrance of or exit of the nature preserve there could be a trash can?
It's been tried before.
Okay.
I think, but it's been tried in various ways before, and they end up broken or gone or things like that. So, but it's generally, we may try again.
Because I know he's been a violator of the cleanup rule in the nature preserve, because he's like, I don't want to carry it all around.
Yeah. Well, even if people would just kick it off the trail, that'd be nice, that people don't have to step in it. However, on that note, we are actually going to ban dogs completely out there.
Wow.
We had a couple of unfortunate incidences recently.
Dogs off the leash?
Yep. And just too many people out there keeping their dogs off the leash, and it's becoming more and more of a problem, especially with, you know, we get a lot more people out there. You know, our visitors, the number of visitors to the nature preserve has increased over the years a lot. And so dogs are becoming more and more of a problem, especially when people don't keep them on a leash and too many people don't follow the law. I mean, it is the law. They have to keep them on a leash.
Oh, it's actually like
there, so.
The law.
Yep.
Okay. I thought it was just a guideline.
Right, yeah. So... especially
so no
you know, public
no.
place, right?
Okay.
Exactly. So.
No means no.
No.
But yeah, and we also have, you know, students are doing research out there, so dogs dig up their research. You know, again, the feces on the trails is a big problem. I get probably the biggest complaint I get about the preserve is dogs from people, even dog owners that complain about other dog owners having their dogs off the leash and stuff. So,
well. Yeah. On that note, on the note of improper dog care and leashing,
we have exactly 1 minute to recap.
We're going to have to go ahead and say that this is WHRW 90.5 FM. You've been listening to Sustainable Binghamton Radio.
Mm-hmm.
That's I'm Zach.
I'm Hadassa.
And we've been talking to Dylan Horvath of the Nature Preserve.
Yeah. And, leave it on a positive note.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah. Join us the next week, same time, 5:30 to 6:30. We talk about issues related to sustainability. We're not...
Generally with a positive emphasis.
Always,
yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely tune in, and please give us feedback at sustainable.binghamton@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.